Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from The Voice of America. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Anna Mateo, Susan Shand, and Steve Ember. But first, this report from Brian Lynn.
When you are reading something in English and you see a word or words you do not know, what do you do? Do you pause and look up the definitions? Or do you put down the reading and find something different to read? Neither solution is ideal. Unless you are reading at a level that is clearly too high for you, avoiding reading may leave you feeling defeated, and pausing to look up every word can slow down your reading. There is a better solution, using context clues. A context clue is a piece of information that appears near an unknown word or phrase and makes its meaning clearer. Context clues are right there in the text, but sometimes we don't see them. Reading is one of the best ways to improve your English. So in this week's Education Tips, we will talk about four kinds of context clues that can help you become a better reader. The first kind is synonyms. As you come across unknown words while reading, look for synonyms. A synonym is a word or phrase that has a similar meaning to the unknown word. Read and listen to this short passage from a Learning English story in 2015 and consider what fundraiser means.
Japanese food and music were also served to the 100 or so people who attended the event. This was the third year the fundraiser was held. Money raised from ticket sales, each ticket cost $100 to $150, supports the National Cherry Blossom Festival.
Looking at the first sentence, you see an event is being discussed. In the second, the writer replaces the word event with the word fundraiser. When one word replaces another in a text, often it is a synonym. So you might suppose that a fundraiser is some kind of event. The third and fourth sentences say more about the kind of event. It has music and food, and is raising money for a festival through ticket sales. And that's often what happens at a fundraiser, which is a ticketed social event that raises money for a cause. The second kind of clue is antonyms. Antonyms are words that mean the opposite of a word. One way to identify an antonym is to look for contrast words, such as but, however, though, although, unlike, whereas, and despite. These words signal that some opposite idea or meaning is coming. Let's look at this sentence from a recent Learning English story. See if the contrast word although helps you understand what a critic is.
The United States will begin restricting visas to citizens from six other countries on February 21st, although critics question the move.
The first part of the sentence states a policy change on visas. In the second part, The word although signals that contrasting information is coming, which is that critics are questioning the new policy. From this, we might guess that a critic is a person who disapproves of something. The third kind of clue is appositives. An appositive is a noun or noun phrase that comes after another noun where the second defines the first. That definition will make more sense after looking at the example below. It uses an appositive to explain the meaning of the word constellation. Here it is. Constellations, or groups of stars that form shapes in the sky, usually represent a mythological person, or creature, or a non-living object. The sentence uses a comma followed by the word or to introduce the appositive groups of stars that form shapes in the sky. Punctuation is important here. Appositives usually have a comma before and after them. But note that sometimes appositives do not use the signal word or. And be careful, commas have many purposes in written texts, and they do not always signal appositives. The fourth kind of clue is examples. Examples can help explain the meaning of a word or idea. In English, the most common ways we introduce examples are with the phrases for example, for instance, such as, and like. And now for some closing thoughts. Learning to use context clues can take time. Don't pressure yourself to be great at the skill too quickly. Also, it is often not necessary to know the meaning of every word to understand what you are reading. So, the next time you come across a word you don't know, ask yourself whether you can understand the sentence without it. I'm Brian Lynn.
Now, it's time for Words and Their Stories, a program from VOA Learning English. The internet has taught us many things. One important lesson is this. Cats are funny, strange, and often unpredictable animals. Their quirky personalities have made cats popular as household pets in homes across the United States. And they are great hunters. Mice are often on their top five kill list. But sometimes a cat will not kill the animal it catches. Instead, the catch becomes kind of a toy or plaything. The cat seizes a mouse, then lets it go, catches it, lets it go, over and over again. It is good fun for the cat, but frightening for the poor mouse. So, if you play cat and mouse with someone, you play a power game with them. You, the person with the power, are the cat. Maybe you pretend to give the other person something they want, but then take it away. You toy with them. We often call a situation like this a cat and mouse game. For example, a child might offer something sweet to her little brother and then take it away when he reaches for it. A cat and mouse game is filled with lots of action, chases, near captures, and repeated escapes. In extreme cases, a cat and mouse game is never ending. Now let's leave the game of cat and mouse and talk about playing in a different way. Let's imagine a classroom filled with young children. The teacher must leave the room for a couple of minutes. At first, everyone is well behaved. But the longer the teacher is gone, the more the class acts up. It starts out slowly. Someone throws a piece of paper. A couple of students get up and walk around. Others start laughing loudly. Someone yells. Suddenly, all of the students are doing things they would never do with the teacher in the room. But you know what we say, when the cat's away, the mice will play. This expression means that people sometimes misbehave when no one is there to watch them. So the teacher is the cat and the students are the mice. We often use this expression when talking about children and parents, employees and office supervisors, and even people in committed relationships. And that brings us to the end of this Words and Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Ana Mateo.
Eva Chura lives in an old gold mining town high in the Andes Mountains of Peru. She works with women known locally as payaqueras, or gold pickers. She searches through the rocks of the Andes, looking for small pieces of gold. 12 years ago, Chura moved to the village of La Rinconada from her hometown of Chupa. La Rinconada is believed to be the highest settlement in the world. It is home to about 50,000 people. 5 of Chura's 8 children live with her in a metal structure. She walks for an hour to reach the place where local women work. When they arrive, they sit down and chew cocoa leaves, smoke cigarettes, and drink a little alcohol for luck. "I don't count on my husband because he is no help as a father or a husband," she said. "I'm the papa and the mama. We don't want for anything. We have everything." To remove gold from the rocks, the men and women use mercury, a toxin that they wash away with water from a nearby glacier. The water flows down the mountain into rivers. The water used in mining is just dumped, and all the communities downstream receive polluted water to support their farms, said Frederico Chavari. He is a lawyer and has worked on cases involving environmental crimes. "The pollution goes directly into Lake Titicaca," he said. Titicaca is the largest lake in South America. It provides the drinking water and fish for the area's population. It is so badly polluted that the Global Nature Fund, a German environmental group, named it the most threatened lake in the world in 2012. In the past, the pieces of gold found by the women made their way to jewelers and telephone manufacturers. In 2018, a Swiss company that had been taking the metal for years stopped after Peruvian government lawyers claimed the company was connected to organized crime. Now, Chura and the others in La Rinconada say the gold supply is running out. "It's not like it used to be. That's why so many ugly things happen," she said. "Sometimes there's gold, other times no. At the moment, it's very low," Chura said. The men of La Rinconada bar all women from the mines dug under the rock. The men believe the mine has a female spirit, which becomes angry if the women try to take her gold. So The payaqueras climb onto black scree the men have dropped on the ground and search through it. They hope to find gold the men have missed. The women take any gold they find to the black market gold dealers whose stores line La Ricanada's main street. In a week, sometimes I can get 1 gram or 2 grams of gold, Chura said. Black market prices often change, but that can mean anywhere from $50 to $100. If I'm lucky, it can sometimes be 20 grams, but that's down to luck, she added. I'm Susan Shand.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. World War II finally ended in August of 1945. Life in the United States began to return to normal. Soldiers began to come home and find jobs. Factories stopped producing war materials and began to produce goods for peacetime. At the same time, other changes began to take place in society. Many Americans were no longer satisfied with their old ways of life. They wanted something new and better. And many were now earning enough money to find that better life. Millions of Americans moved out of cities and small towns. They bought newly built homes in suburban communities outside busy cities. Today, we look at the growth of suburbs and other changes in the American population in the years after World War II.
And we'll have the living room right in here, and the kitchen right here, so we can see the children playing in the yard.
Yeah, the children. Children? Say, how many are you planning on? Not more than 6, I hope. Maybe I better add a few more rooms back here at that.
A married couple in a marketing film for the home building industry. The United States counts its population every 10 years. The first census took place in 1790. At that time, the country had about 4 million people. 100 years later, in 1890, the population was 63 million. By 1950, there were more than 150 million people living in the United States. In the early years of America, the average mother had 8 to 10 children. Living conditions were hard. Many children died at an early age. Families needed a lot of help on the farm, so it was good to have many children. But over the years, birth rates fell. Families began to have fewer and fewer children. By 1900, the average woman had only 3 or 4 children. In 1936, during the Great Depression, the average American mother gave birth to only 2 children. Things changed after World War II. Suddenly, it seemed like every family started having babies. Parents were hopeful about the future. There were lots of jobs. People felt the need for a family and security after the long, difficult years of the war. From 1950 to 1960, the number of children between the ages of 5 and 14 increased by more than 10 million. The increase in births after the war produced what became known as the baby boom generation. An estimated 78 million Americans were born between 1946 and 1964. Many of the new parents moved to homes in the new suburbs built outside the urban environment of cities. Usually, a developer would buy land, maybe from a farmer, then clear it, level it, and build houses on it. Young families would buy the houses with money that they borrowed from local banks. Life was different in the suburbs, calmer, less crowded than life in the big city. There were all sorts of group activities. There were Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts, parent-teacher associations at school, outdoor cooking, where families gathered in someone's backyard to eat hamburgers hot off the grill. Historian William Manchester described life in the suburbs in this way. The new suburbs were free, open, and honestly friendly to anyone except black people, whose time had not yet come. Manchester wrote, families moving in found that their new friends were happy to help get them started. Children in the suburbs exchanged toys and clothing almost as though they were group property. When little Bobby outgrew his clothes, his mother gave them to little Billy across the street. People felt safe enough to leave their doors unlocked. Parents did everything they could to make life good for their children. Between 1950 and 1960, the number of boys playing on Little League baseball teams increased from less than 1 million to almost 6 million. The number of Girl Scouts increased by 2 million. Bicycle sales doubled. And it wasn't just two-wheeled transportation that experienced a boost.
See the USA in your Chevrolet. America's asking you to call. Drive your Chevrolet through the USA. America's the greatest land of all. On a highway or a road along a levee. Performance is sweeter, nothing can beat her. Life is completer in a Chevy. So make a date today to see the USA. See it in your Chevrolet.
U.S. new car production was stopped during World War II to allow those factories to produce airplanes, tanks, and other military vehicles for the war effort. With the prosperity of peacetime, many Americans visited auto dealerships for the first time in years to replace that tired family car with something more up-to-date, even luxurious. For many years, popular singer Dinah Shore invited optimistic post-war Americans to take to the highway and see their country in a Chevrolet.
And see in your
war prosperity also led Americans to replace outdated home appliances, buy a new refrigerator or a television set.
Come closer, sweetheart. Well, say, I don't think that's fair, because we can't get closer.
Oh, but you could. If you had one of the new Westinghouse television sets with the exclusive electronic magnifier that gives you a big close-up image whenever you want it. All you do is turn the electronic magnifier knob, and there, you get the heart of the picture. And see, I'm close enough to say, hello, good looking.
Actress Betty Furness was commercial spokeswoman for Westinghouse.
And every Sunday night, General Electric brings you the finest motion picture stars on TV. The great names in comedy, in mystery, in romance. Every week a star, all summer long, on the General Electric Theater.
Over at competitor General Electric, actor Ronald Reagan, later the 40th President of the United States and often referred to as the Great Communicator, was for many years an effective television commercial spokesman every week on the GE Theater. Also tried to improve their children's education. In 1960, parents bought almost three times as many educational books as they did 10 years before. Parents also bought millions of dollars worth of pianos, violins, and other musical instruments for their children. It was true that the average number of children per family was increasing, but the total population of the United States did not increase as much during this period as one might have expected. The reason for this was that fewer immigrants were coming to the United States. In fact, the number of immigrants had been dropping for many years. In 1910, 11 immigrants were coming to America for every 1,000 Americans already living here. By 1950, less than 2 immigrants were coming for every 1,000 Americans. Where immigrants were coming from also changed. In the past, most came from Northern and Western Europe. But now, growing numbers of people came to the United States from Southern and Eastern Europe and from Latin America and Asia. Other changes in the United States population were also taking place. In the 1950s, most Americans still lived in the eastern, central, and southern parts of the country. But growing numbers moved west. The population of the western states increased by almost 40% during the 1950s. Remember we said the United States population gets counted every 10 years? One reason is because populations are used to decide how many members each state will have in the House of Representatives. Population changes can mean changes in the political influence of individual states in Congress. Another population change after World War II was in life expectancy. An American born in the early 1900s could only expect to live about 47 years. By the 1950s, however, most Americans could expect to live well past their 60th birthday. Life expectancy continued to increase with improvements in living conditions and medical care. The United States was a changing country, a nation on the move after World War II.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy.